Welcome to the Art Scene, brought to you each week by UALR Public Radio. I'm Ann Nicholson. My guest this week is also an artist. His name is Manuel Hughes. He was born in Arkansas, off in Forest City, and moved with his family to St. Louis when he was seven.
I left when I was seven, and I went to a school in St. Louis that was near an art center. So I enrolled myself in it was called the Community Arts Center.
And that was quite easily done?
Yes. It's in the neighborhood. So all you do is you just walk in. You tell them that you want to take art classes.
And they took you in, but with open arms?
Yes. It was a community center. Yes. And I have recollection of making drawings all the time of my aunt, et cetera. So I love to draw, and no one encouraged me. It's just, it was something that I wanted to do.
So what was it you drew? Just the objects around you?
Everything.
And what about imagination? Did you draw on that as well?
I think I did. I was more interested in looking at things and, reproducing them.
And when you started that, did you have anything that hit you as specifically interesting for you?
I liked the faces of people. I drew a lot of, I drew my aunt a lot of times.
And people with expressions that particularly fascinated you, or just any face?
I probably would just say that I just like to draw the people that I was surrounding.
Mostly your own age, or mostly adult, or what?
Mostly adults.
And nothing particular that would draw you. You just would put pen to paper. And what did you actually work with in the terms of the...
The usual traditional things that children work with, pencil, paper, lots of crayons,
And any particular teachers that seemed to be very much interested in you?
When I was in the fifth and sixth grade, there was one teacher. She taught everything, of course, but it seems as if the only thing that she taught was art, because she was obsessed with art. And I got lots of encouragement. And I did lots of, it was like a welcome space to make drawings.
And mostly of people. You didn't have...
Well, at that time I did. I did everything.
And then when did you start to branch out into other fields?
Okay, by the seventh and the eighth grade after high school, that was the end of that. The only thing that I took mechanical drawing, because I was interested in drawing. But by that time, I was beginning to think about preparing myself to go to the college and whatnot. And I was beginning to think in terms of some of the science areas. Because I was interested in drawing, I was thinking maybe something like architectural engineering, something like that, where I could be drawing.
But it wouldn't actually be living creatures the way they had
been. Oh, no. This is strictly in preparation to, get a job.
And did you?
I went to Wayne State University studying architectural engineering. And while I was there, because of my great interest in the arts, I would hang out in the art department. And finally, a group of artist students, they said, get a degree in art education. You can get a job. And so that's what I switched. I switched to art education.
And that was quite easy?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's sure.
So that move proved the one that really drew you.
Yes. And after majoring in education, art education, you know, for about 3.5 years, I was sitting one day among the fraternity brothers, and we were talking about career choices and whatnot. And no one at the table wanted to teach. They were taking the teaching degree so that they could have a job. And so it just seemed to be kind of ridiculous. So I just, you know, I just dropped out of the art education program, transferred to the state university, and chose, you know, fine arts as my major.
So what drew you to eventually end up in Paris to have that as the other half of you?
I wanted to live in New York. And so my number one goal is to live in New York.
So what happened?
And eventually I lived in New York. And so I lived in New York for like 30, 35 years. And I still go to New York 2 or 3 times a year.
So what in New York particularly drew you?
Well, New York was the center of all of the arts.
Ah.
You know, theater, you know, dance, you know, the music. Visual arts, everything. There were many, many people who were very serious about being artists.
And that suddenly clicked with you.
Oh, yes. The first time I went to New York, I knew this is where I would live.
Ah. And any particular aspect of New York?
Of course, you know, all of the centers of art. You know, it's like when I would visit New York before I lived there, I would spend the evenings in the theater. During the day, I would spend time in the museums. And after theater, I would go to the nightclubs. So the whole, from the time that I woke up in the morning till I went to bed was in pursuit of one of the arts.
Now, you have some very distinctively different aspects of art that you draw that comes in as something that you have to pursue. These pictures of dolls, of small people, of aspects of the human body, of expressions of the people who you draw, the quality of the pieces that we have been able to see in your paintings, your book. What is it about it that draws you so much?
It's mostly about the situation in American society for the African American. My paintings and drawings are an expression of the way we're treated. I started with the dolls purely by accident. I am a great lover of antiques. And my love for antiques come from the period that I spent with my grandmother in Arkansas. She had a farm, and my mother was ill, so she had to go to St. Louis for that was the only place at that time where they had a good center to treat African-Americans for tuberculosis. And so my mother was there for 5 years. And during that period, I stayed with my grandmother. And that was one of the happiest periods of my life. So I was driven to antiques because they reminded me of the form objects, you know, the tools, the furniture, etc. So this led me to collecting mm-hmm. antiques to live in and to make paintings and drawings of. And while searching for antiques, I began to notice that there were very, very few photographs, antique photographs of African Americans, like from the, you know, the 19th century. So I began to look for them. And then I discovered the black dolls. And so I began to collect them, and I began to like make paintings of them. And one of the most exciting thing was I found this little small black doll with blue eyes. And so it looked so surreal. I said, if I got that response, if I painted it, I did paintings of it, other people would get a similar feeling. And so that led to the painting of dolls. Then you're buying dolls, so you go to, like in Paris, you go all over to the various flea markets, and they have specialist places because there are people who restore dolls and they collect dolls. And so there was a place that they specialize in doll parts. And so I bought all of the black doll parts that I could find.
And what did you do with them?
I began to make paintings of them.
In their separate state?
Yes.
Fascinating.
There's a whole series of etchings by the Spanish artist Goya. Mm-hmm. And I've seen in history books and in museums where you will see arms, legs, heads hanging in trees from when the wars in Spain, the soldiers, you know, they chopped the heads off, chopped the arms off, and they hung them up to let people know that they should be very fearful. And so those images of arms and hands and Goya's etchings came to mind when I saw arms and legs and heads of dolls. So I utilized the doll parts as something that would express some of the horrors that happened to African Americans, you know, in the United States.
Did that connection start at the same time that you began to paint African-American dolls?
I don't understand the question. Do you mean that I became suddenly aware of the African-American situation? Of course.
No, not because you would have grown up with it.
Yeah, I grew up.
Yes. You know. No, just the very fact that you took this type of drawing, this image that very few people would have seen before.
Yes.
Of a child, of children, of black children, whether they had blue eyes or not, they would never have been primarily the thing that an artist would draw. There would be many other things, but not the doll and aspects of doll children.
Well, I think this grew out of my desire to do certain types of expression. Mm-hmm. And it also grew out of the simple fact that I was collecting, you know, antiques of all kinds. And among the things that I collected were dolls.
So there were dolls from other countries, Japanese, Chinese, English, or just purely?
No, I was only interested in, you know, black dolls. Uh-huh. I have some antique dolls, you know, that I've found that are not black dolls in, you know, wherever I go, because I also put those in my paintings also. I would put doll parts, white doll parts, doll heads, mm-hmm. white doll heads.
So you were producing dolls to create another culture.
Not another culture, because I was creating my culture.
Yes, but for other people, for myself.
For most of the history of the African Americans, there weren't black dolls. The only dolls that African Americans could buy were white dolls.
Mm.
So there are very few African Americans my age who, as a child, had black dolls.
What's the case now?
Now, after the movement of the 60s, there began to appear black dolls.
And it took that long?
Yes, it took that long.
So when you did find a part of a black doll, or a black doll, how did you treat it? Was it something that you picked up and cuddled, almost as a man might do, just to show that these things could happen?
Well, all of the objects that I collect, mm-hmm. there's a passion for them. Uh-huh. There's a tremendous respect for their physicality and their visuality. So they are very precious for me. You know, it's like some of the doll heads and parts I've had for like 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wouldn't dare depart with them. You know.
What about children when they see your dolls? Do they gravitate toward them and want to handle them?
Well, the children don't see the dolls. What they see the paintings of the dolls.
So you don't have a child that comes in to watch and to look with adults to see these dolls that are on show, what their reaction is?
I have grandchildren,
mm-hmm.
and so they see my paintings. And I also have a daughter, and I have a daughter who's handicapped. And so she's 19, but she's still childlike.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a fascination for dolls, you know. You can ask her any year between 3 and 4 and 19 what she wants for Christmas or her birthday, and she'll always say a doll.
And she gets one.
After, you know, seeming like hundreds of dolls, you know, it's like I must confess, she still gets dolls.
And you still draw dolls?
I still draw dolls. And when her dolls get torn up, I do paintings of her doll parts.
And show the doll that has different aspects?
Oh, yes, of course.
Does it distress her?
No. No, it doesn't. You know, she looks at my work and she's makes drawings every day. And she tells me she's making a drawing like that painting. And of course, it looks, there's nothing in her drawing that you can identify as being human, you know, because they're abstractions.
Mm-hmm.
But she'll tell me that, oh, that's that painting. So she looks at them and she draws them, and it's mostly a positive experience. There's nothing frightening about it to her.
Uh-huh. And does she preserve them?
What?
The dolls that she draws.
No, because she doesn't preserve any of her drawings.
Ah.
You know, once they're done, that's it. I preserve her drawings.
Her drawings.
Yeah, because they're very special.
Yes.
But as soon as she, finishes, that's the end of it. She's going on to the next drawing.
Now, your drawings and your creation of dolls, your creation of art has become a powerful way of expressing what you feel has been in your background growing up.
Yes. And one of the fascinating things about the emotional impact that I can put into a painting of what you would consider to be toys. You know, it's like normally there's a certain amount of innocence associated with toys. But with the paintings and the drawings that I do, there's a tremendous amount of violence that's associated with the toys.
The ugly part.
Yes, the ugly part.
And that is something that satisfies you?
Yes, it does.
Do you draw aspects of it in a way that you wouldn't have done otherwise growing up as an African-American?
I would almost have to reach a certain level of maturity because I probably was not thinking about that aspect as a child. This you became more aware of when you look back and you reflect upon your childhood. I did a series that I call Arkansas Memories.
Mm-hmm.
And I called them that simply because of two things. I was born here. I grew up here. And some of the first form of prejudice, extreme prejudice, was in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it could have been in Colorado. It could have been in California. It would have been the same. So it just happens to be in Arkansas because that's where I was.
And what was it that made that memorable?
You have memories of how you was mistreated.
Now, was it a physical mistreatment or what's even more painful?
First of all, you had to be very, very careful about what you did and what you said and how you act. When you are in the presence of white people.
Mm.
Because if you said anything that implied that you were equal, you were in danger.
And you knew that?
Of course. You knew that because your parents, everyone told you that you can't do this, you can't say that, you can't act a certain way. You have to be very careful about, you can't look at white people.
When did it change enough for to be?
It's always memorable. It's just that I probably, as when I was making art as a child, I wasn't interested in expressing that type of, for me, that's more of a mature thinking. I would imagine by the time I became a teenager, then I was aware of a tremendous amount of anger and a feeling of maltreatment. But I don't remember thinking about this when I was 7 and 8 years old.
No. But when you were an adult and you went to college and you were with grown-ups with the same color skin but also different people.
Yes.
You were beginning to notice that slowly, as you grew, the horrors of early prejudice that you had absorbed was slowly being superseded by something that hoped you, gave you hope?
Well,
when you were in Paris, for example, was it easier?
Oh, well, I've only like been living in Paris, mm-hmm. you know, the last 20 years.
But when you found what a wonderful place it was for antiques.
Well, when I first went to Paris in 65, mm-hmm. as soon as I got out of graduate school, to go to the museums all over uh-huh. Europe to look at the real actual work. Of course, I noticed then that the Europeans treated African Americans very differently than what Americans did.
You hear that mostly from musicians of the same era.
Yes. And I have very, very many musician friends, and they all have lived in Europe for a while, and they continue to play in Europe every year, you know, simply because there's a greater respect for jazz.
And they've also made better friends.
Yes, because there's a more respect for you as individual than in the United States.
So you are a microcosm of a development.
I am just the person.
Exactly. Because this is something that you have brought to the fore in a way that's remarkable because it's so different.
Well, that's one of the exciting things about being an artist is the desire to make your own expression, to make a very specific thing that will be identified with you as an individual.
Now, this booklet, the African American Series 2008 to 2009, Manuel Hughes, and there's a lovely little doll with a pretty dress.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite.
Yes. That's the one with blue eyes.
That's the one with the blue
yes.
eyes.
And did you find as you were growing up and the dolls were being acceptable that the dolls themselves began to be different?
As I was growing up, I had no particular thoughts about dolls.
Ah.
Yeah, you know, my interest in dolls is, you know, this is an adult thing.
Now, this booklet has heads and arms.
Yes.
And separations.
Yes.
And then you switch, and there's some very attractive little dolls.
Yes.
Yes. And framed very carefully,
yes.
lovingly.
Yes, I make my own frame.
Yes. And hands become very evocative.
Yes. Yes.
And don't look black.
Yes.
And so you've got a wonderful arrangement in passages of which follows what. And then you switch to something that looks like ripples on an ocean.
Oh, you mean the I've been painting for 60 years. So around every 20 years, I choose a new subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so the what they actually are, they are strips of Clorox bottles that I cut. I was interested in finding my own still life object.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted a still life object that nobody else painted or drew. So in my search for this, that's what I found.
But the trouble about that one is that it's so full of movement.
Well, that's the whole idea. I want movement.
Instability.
I'm trying to create a feeling. It's like I'm taking inanimate objects and I am creating perhaps like the flight of birds movement.
And they could be.
Yes.
A flight of birds going away from you.
Yes.
And that's why I thought of ripples.
Yes.
Because the ocean.
It could symbolize waves.
Yes.
Water moving. Anything that moves.
And the oceans particularly, or yes, even a stone that you throw into a lake that's been still.
Because like water takes on that movement of the arch shape. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And that is absolutely entirely up to the artist to do what he or she thinks is the ability to portray something that is irretrievable.
Yes. Yeah, that's one of the things that draw artists to becoming artists.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ability to have your own expression, to find a voice.
Maybe end on that note. I think that's a very, very pertinent comment.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
Did we cover most of what you
are? I beg your pardon?
Did we cover most of what you do?
Yes, definitely.
Thank you.
And I think this was better than a telephone interview.
There has to be a face behind the voice.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was my pleasure.